backhand shoots. He's gone.
It's the show that's all about hockey. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers.
Costa with a rocket!
On Boston's home of the Boston Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
First of all, I told them, for me, it's always an honor and a privilege to coach these guys. Listen, there's days where, as a coach, I'm frustrated, fans, organization, players themselves, but, you know, we come to work every day. We're disappointed. It didn't go better for us. No doubt, and there'll be some evaluation of players, coaches, you know, up and down. You know, that's what any good organization will do once your season's done, but that's what I told them. Like I said, it's a privilege and an honor.
Bruce Cassidy speaking after the Game 5 loss and the end of the Bruins' time in the playoff bubble up in Toronto as we welcome you into the season finale of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Couple of hours to talk it out today as the Bruins go into what should be a tremendously eventful and interesting offseason. As they've got some decisions to make on a number of players and the direction and all of that. And we will get to all of it over the course of the next couple hours. And we're here to take your calls at 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston joined in our Town Fair Tire studios by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Much earlier end to the season than we had hoped, going out in the second round. What's the biggest reason why the Bruins are done at this point?
Tampa was better. you can't deny that, right? I mean, that's when you watch those games. I mean, other than the one game, most of, they were all close, but one game obviously wasn't. But they did the things that they needed to in order to win, and that sounds silly and easy, but Tampa was better. In a number of areas, they were certainly better in front of their net and the Bruins' net. And if that makes any sense. And, Vasilevsky was really good when he needed to be. He made some great saves. Tampa was better. They deserved to win. Simple.
The bedrock of the Bruins was the way they defend, the way they play in front of the net, and the type of goaltending that they get. Well, some of that bedrock... It was a little shaky there during that playoff series, and I think in addition to some of the things that Beersy mentioned, that Tampa was better 5-on-5. You saw a little bit more productivity from a lot of their top-end players. Listen, Marchand, he was terrific throughout that series. Probably the Bruins, he was definitely the Bruins' best player during that series. David Krejci. Goal and an assist in the last game. I think you certainly saw more from him at the tail end of that series. But I think Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov. I started thinking about this coming
Victor
in.
Hedman.
Victor Hedman. the formula that the Columbus Blue Jackets used to upset Tampa last year and this year to push them as far as they did, even though it was five games, the five overtime game, and then the last game ended up going into overtime. They targeted three different players. They targeted Hedman, they targeted Vasilevsky, and they targeted Kucherov. And the Bruins were not able to find solutions for those three guys across the five games.
If they had not, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but we're going to talk a lot about what needs to happen in the offseason as this team kind of looks toward next year. And next year may not be all that far away. What do they need to fix? I mean, this was a good hockey team from start to finish throughout the course of the regular season. They were their President's Trophy winner. There's obviously always a tendency on the part of fans to kind of overreact. But how big are the changes that are going to need to be made this offseason? Knowing what the situation is with the cap, knowing what the situation is with some of the contracts that they've got and who they might be able to afford and might not. But is it as simple as, look, Tampa's going to be what they're going to be.
Tampa went all in this year.
They did.
I mean, I don't know if people understand like what they did in order to try to get over the top. They identified last year after getting knocked out by Columbus, saying, "Look, like we need to be grittier. We need to have more sandpaper in our game in order to win." They didn't come out and say it, but they said it with their actions and the players that they acquired. When they acquired Barkley Goodrow. Who's a good role player. They gave up a first-round pick for him. That's a lot. But he's a guy that's going to produce in the playoffs. He's a guy that's going to come to play every night and be in your face, which he was. You know, he's the guy that fought Richie after Richie's hit, in that series. So he's a big guy. You know, he's not a heavyweight by any means, but he's a guy that's going to stand up for his teammates. He's going to play in your face. Coleman. He's a guy that can score goals, but he's also in your face all the time. So that those two guys, and they gave up two first-rounders for him. They gave his first-round pick, and then they gave up another player that was a first-round pick. That's a ton to give up. And they were all in. You know, they signed Patrick Maroon in the offseason. They signed Zach Bogosian when Buffalo released him, when his contract was released, whatever terminology it is. But when he was let go by the Sabres, you know, they identified what they needed to do. They were all in, and they paid a steep price for it. And I don't know if how many guys are going to be able to keep after this year. So, you know, you kind of look at it moving forward that they're going to lose some players because they can't afford to keep everybody.
I think Anthony Cirelli is up. Andre Vasilevsky's big-time contract kicks in next year.
The two defensemen, Sergachev.
Some of the guys you just mentioned, you've got Bogosian, you've got Maroon, you've got
but
I'm saying they can bring a couple of those guys back at low numbers. But I'm saying that because Vasilevsky's contract kicks in, and now he's up at over $9 million,
Nine and a half.
So they can't, they're not going to be able to keep everybody. So they're going to have to make a couple of changes there. But anyhow, so you asked about the Bruins, right? So that's what we're getting to. I mean, when you look at and evaluate, if you evaluated the play of everybody, right? Who other than McAvoy, maybe Grizzlick at times, but the other defensemen struggled. Krug wasn't as good as he has been. I mean, I love Torrey's game and what he brings and how hard he plays, but he wasn't there. Carlo struggled. He struggled. Mm-hmm. He struggled with the puck every time it came to him. Clifton gave you what he could. He's a sixth defenseman. You know, so and Chara struggled. I mean, he did. He wasn't as good as he needed to be. So, but he. What do you expect him from Chara right now? I mean, you know what his career is phenomenal, and he deserves all the accolades that he gets. But he struggled against Tampa. So, and then the forward group got outplayed by Tampa's forward group, up and down the lineup. So, what are they going to do? There's a lot of questions right now. They didn't perform as well. I think personally as they could have. And was injuries, maybe it was age, maybe it was the pause and coming back. Hard to put your finger on it, but
I mean,
they got outplayed.
There's no way to know, Judd, but you know, to me, it felt like they weren't the same team after the break that they were, you know, back in March. I don't think they ever really found where they had been prior to the shutdown. And you know, that's always going to be kind of the question that people will have in their minds about this season. Is like, this is a President's Trophy winning team. Would things have been different if they didn't shut the league down for 4.5 months and bring these guys back fresh?
Well, I think we had talked about it right as the Bruins got eliminated, that there are two gnawing questions. What would have happened if there wasn't a 5-plus-month shutdown? And two, what would have happened if your goaltender, your number one Vezina nominee, did not opt out? What would have happened
That can't be overlooked.
And not just because of the play, but because of the mental. I think there's got to be a mental aspect to that.
You know, Halak was fine. Like, you can't look at goals and say, oh, you know, just horrible goal. But the saves that you needed to have at the right time. And Tuukka made those saves last year in that playoff run. in a lot of those instances. And there's so many mistakes that are overlooked when the goaltender makes the save. Mm. You forget about the mistake that was made ahead of it. And if that save's not being made, then now, you know, you look at the save, you look at the mistake, and, you know, you can. So, yeah, that's huge. That's huge. And that gives them, I mean, that's an equal playing field in net. You know, Vasilevsky's, like, he's the real deal. He's, you know, right up there. Well, he's going to make 9.5 next year. He's right up there, right? You know, and Halak isn't that. You know, he's a really good backup goaltender. Now, I know teams are getting it done right now with their backups, but, you know, it's a strange year.
Anton Khudobin, Western Conference finalist.
Yeah, he allows 4 goals a game.
Yeah.
He allows 4 goals a game.
In Colorado's system, and Michael Hutchinson.
I'm not putting Khudobin down because he's done a really good job, but they're winning 5-4.
Well, that's it. If the Bruins could put up 5 goals a game,
right,
Halak could have you in the Eastern Conference Finals,
they're
too.
They're going against Colorado's number 3 goalie.
Yeah. All right, we're just getting started here. We got two full hours of the hockey show. We're going to get to your calls, and they are starting the lineups. We'll get to them coming up right after this. 617-779-0985. Join us until 11 o'clock.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub. Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
98.5, The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Here until 11 o'clock, take your call, 617-779-0985. We will be joined by Billy Jaffe coming up at 10 today. Get his thoughts on the end of the season, and also about who's left in the bubbles, which is about to be consolidated to one bubble after tonight. Toronto shuts down. They move everything out to Edmonton for the conference finals and the Stanley Cup final. Let's get to your calls here. We'll start with Maria in Watertown. Good morning, Maria.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
I think, you know, this season is going to go down as a season of, you know, what could have been, and one of the most disappointing seasons that, you know, I can remember as a longtime Bruins fan, from, you know, the stoppage of play due to these crazy circumstances, and then Pasta and Kasha, you know, not showing up in a timely manner, Brett Ritchie appearing to be out of shape, Tuukka opting out. It was like a perfect storm of one, like, pitfall after another. And, you know, I also have to throw a little criticism at Bruce Cassidy, because I think he also made some very disappointing and questionable decisions, particularly during the Tampa Bay series with respect to the lineup. And, you know, now having said that, moving forward, I know it's unrealistic to expect a team to go all in year after year. But at this juncture, if the Bruins do want to keep this core intact, then I think Donnie Sweeney's got a very, very difficult job ahead of him in terms of, you know, once and for all, making a decision about getting someone to play with Krejci that can play with Krejci once and for all. I really don't think that's Jake DeBrusk, and I really don't think it's Andre Kasha. I want him to take a good, long, hard look at this roster, and if it means having to let Torey Krug go or having let Jake DeBrusk go in order to have a solid team going forward for Bergeron, for Pastrnak, for Marchand, then let's make those hard decisions now. Because honestly, I don't want to see the Bruins throwing $5 or $6 million at Jake DeBrusk. I don't want to see them throwing $8 or $9 million at Torey Krug. I just don't. I don't think that's viable for what this team needs if they sincerely want to be committed to this core group and get them another championship before they all sail off into the sunset. I also want to say thank you, as always, for your graciousness, for letting me come on the air and chat with you, and I hope you all enjoy the rest of 2020.
All right. Thank you, Maria. We'll talk to you, I'm sure, when the next season comes around, whenever that may be. kind of a lot to unpack there, but that's the, I think that's the ultimate question here is how much change does there need to be? How much, you know, you are going to have some changes because as she mentioned, look, Torrey Krug's contract is the biggest one. Jake DeBrusk is a restricted free agent. How much of a bump does he need to get? What can you afford to do? Because you've got some, you know, the Chara situation, which, you know, Bob already kind of alluded to. And then, you know, did we see enough from Andre Kasha to know if he's a fit on that second line? Or, you know, are some of these guys playing out of place? You know, the lineup, she mentioned the lineup decisions, but we talked about that over the last couple of weeks, guys, that, you know, the lineup decisions, some of them are made out of necessity. Some of them are because you're trying to find the best of this team and you don't really know how to get there.
If you win a game, the lineup decisions are great. If you lose, second guess. I mean, that's just the reality of it for a coach. And coaches can, they'll live with that. And all right, so I think before you go overboard with everything, if the players to a man individually performed the way that we've seen them perform, the way that they're capable of performing, is this team good enough? All right. Well, they were the number one team in the NHL during the regular season. So they're pretty good. My point is I think some individuals underperformed in the playoffs, certainly against Tampa. And they weren't up to where they needed to be. Okay. You didn't have your number one goalie. Your D weren't where they needed to be as a group. And the forwards, individually, they had their moments where they were good, but they also had their moments where they got outplayed. I mean, it's just plain and simple. So if everybody's, you know, playing up to their capabilities, all right, now where do we need to, you know, pay guys or trim guys? And that's obviously the salary cap's got a lot to do with it. You know, we heard Torrey Krug say the other day, what, he's not, you know, there's no hometown discount, there's no one-year deal.
No, this is the time he needs to cash in.
He's going to cash in. That's going to be really difficult to re-sign him. So, you know, if that's the case, then where's plan B? You know, are these guys that we drafted ready to play yet? Is Vaakanainen ready to play yet? Is Zboril ready to play yet or capable of it? These are first-round picks that we haven't seen yet or seen very little of. You know, that's like, so these are the, when you're talking about the draft and development, okay, who's ready to step in and play? Is Studnicka ready to be a full-time player? Is Seneshin, Frederick, another first, two more first-round picks. Are these guys going to play? These are first-round picks that should be, well, I know Studnicka is a second-round pick. I'm talking about, you know, Seneshin, Frederick, Zboril, Vaakanainen. What is it with these guys? Can they play or not? And this is the next group coming in. So that's the scary part when you talk about trying to sign guys. If you can't sign guys because they price themselves out, Torrey Krug or whoever that might be, you got to have a next wave coming.
I'm not sure
if they have it right now.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned a guy like Jack Studnicka, he seems, of the group that you just sort of detailed right there, he seems like he has the best odds of becoming a permanent fixture next year. But where? Bergeron signed, Krejci signed, Coyle signed, Corrali is signed. Where are you going to play Studnicka? Do you really want to play him on the wing? And if so, where do you play him in order to maximize his ability?
Well, I think he'll be ready to play next year. And it might be on wing. It might be on wing unless you make a trade.
And that's the question.
And they need a right shot.
And if you look at left defense, if you want to go take a look at Cap Friendly and look at what is available as a left shot defenseman next year in the National Hockey League, there's not a lot out there. Right D, there's a little bit more options. But the Bruins, if Torrey Krug leaves, and it certainly sounds like that's going to be the course of action.
And that's good news for him that there's not a lot out there.
Well, that's fine. But, you know, the other thing is that, you know, how many teams are going to have the ability to pay him and give him the term that he wants? There's certainly going to be teams out there that do that. But this is where the Bruins might have to become creative in order to get their need.
Let's say, for example, just hypothetically, right? Krug leaves and Chara, they don't re-sign him. Well, now what are you doing on left D?
Yeah.
And these guys I just mentioned, are they ready to play yet? is John Moore an option there? That's not an upgrade. So, you know, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made over there. And if Torrey goes, then say Chara comes back. That's another scenario, but you still need to plug that in over there.
Well,
is Lauzon going to play left side? Okay, maybe. I mean, but
the other part too is that if Chara comes back, I think, you know, his role is going to continue to diminish.
Yeah.
And so even if he is back on this team, you can't be counting on him to play, you know, top two, top 4 minutes every night. It's just not going to, that doesn't work. And, you know, you certainly aren't going to want that in the playoffs either. So, you know, you're going to need those guys to not only be able to step in and play, but you're going to need them to play significant minutes on this team.
Well, let's go to an even bigger picture than that. So what is the philosophy of your team? What is our identity? How do you want to play? So if you want to keep a lot of the mantra that, you know, how we defend, how we play in our own end, how we play in front of the net is of critical importance. And then at the same time, Bruce Cassidy had mentioned during his exit interview that the Bruins were going to not reconsider, but tailor what they want to do to get the defensemen more involved. Okay, well, does that take away from my philosophy of how I want to play in my own end? And at the same time, do I have the personnel and how do I get the personnel to play the style that I need in order to be successful?
Let's go to Frank the Tank up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Hey, Frank.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Good
morning.
Look, you know, I'll just get right to it. I feel that this team just wasn't ready. They just weren't ready for the playoffs. I mean, you want to use the excuse of the stoppage or whatever. I think no matter what, even if the stoppage didn't happen, they were going to get eliminated. Tampa Bay was just too good. They really were. You saw that at the deadline. They went and they got their sandpaper and they gave up a lot for it. And, you know, maybe the Bruins weren't ready to do that with their assets. But, I mean, they've really only got five guys in the lineup for people to worry about if you exclude the goalie. And you know the five I'm talking about. So down the middle, I think that the Bruins are in great shape. I mean, I think that Coyle trade, that's a slam dunk. I mean, that kid is performing well. He's gotten right into the lineup, mixed in with everybody, and I think he's doing well. So I think you got to find some people to play with him, and you got to find some people to play with Krejci. It's not going to be an easy offseason this year for Don Sweeney and Cam Neely. I really don't think it's going to be a picnic for them. They really, really have to look at some things. And, you know, what's going to happen with Kevin Miller? You know, Krug is gone. I think we all know that, which tells me that I think Chara's going to come back. But, guys, I think they need to get another big guy on defense who's a defensive defenseman that can play with McAvoy. There's a lot. They're gonna have their work cut out for them this offseason, but it's still very disappointing the way they went out. Like you said, Bob, every man, they got to look at themselves in the mirror and think, you know, could I have done better?
All right, thanks for the call, Frank. Tracy, my screener froze up, so if you can just drop that. We're going to get to some of the points that he just made, including, you know, we've got guys, we're talking about, you know, Chara and talking about Krug, who are free agents right now. We've also got guys that are heading into the last year of their contract, guys like David Krejci, that, you know, we're going to need to talk about what the long-term future is on those guys and whether, you know, you might see some movement there this offseason. So we'll get to that coming up as well. 617-779-0985 as we continue here on the season finale of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here for our season finale of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Taking your calls up until 11 o'clock today, 617-779-0985. So when Frank the Tank called a few minutes ago, he talked about, as the callers are this morning, he's going to talk about changes for this offseason and what the Bruins should and shouldn't be thinking about as they go into an offseason that has as much uncertainty as one can have, because you don't even know when they're going to resume play or how that's going to happen. But I was struck by the other night after Game 5. You know, you see all the players, they're doing their press conferences, and you hear from Bruce Cassidy, and, you know, obviously everybody's down and whatnot, but David Krejci seemed especially kind of depressed after the game, and talked about the – yeah, Tracy, do you have that? Talked a little bit about this loss and why he felt like it was hitting him so hard.
Yeah, Tori is a great player. He always has your back. We definitely want to see him leave. Great friend. I can't say enough about that guy. But at the same time, it just kind of hit me after the game that the core group, few of us, we have 1 or 2, 3 years left with the pandemic going on. You never know what's going to happen. So it's just kind of a little sad right now. At the same time, I don't regret coming into this bubble and fighting for the Stanley Cup. If I would have to do it again, I would.
I mean, he's talking about, you know, kind of the end of the window for this group. And he said, you know, some of us, we only have a year. You know, he's got a year left on his contract. Tuukka's got a year left on his contract. You know, Bergeron's got 2 years left. He's, you know, kind of looking at the end of this run with this group. And he felt, you can tell, he felt like they had a really good shot of winning this year and that they let it slip away. And my question for you guys is, is there a scenario where David Krejci is not here for opening day next year with a year left on his contract? He's got a partial no movement clause, but it's half the league that he could potentially be traded to. And with the play of Charlie Coyle, and this is what kind of pushed me in that direction, you know, that when Frank brought up Charlie Coyle and how well he's played, does it potentially leave a window for the Bruins, if they need to make improvements elsewhere, to save that $7 million and use it to beef themselves up in other places?
Sure, I could absolutely see that. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. Everything's kind of raw right now, but if you think Studnicka is ready to step in and play with another few months of, you know, training and everything else, is he ready to play every day? Is he ready? I mean, he's not as good as David Krejci is right now. There's no question. I mean, Krejci, like, he was really good against Carolina, mm-hmm. really good against Carolina. And he should have had probably, I don't know, 6 to 8 more points in that series, because Kasha couldn't bury one, and he had chances in every game. DeBrusk had chances in every game. He did score 2 in one of the games. But, you know, other than that, like he had some great opportunities in that series. Krejci was on fire there. But and then against Tampa, they didn't have as many opportunities. I mean, I know DeBrusk scored 1, but that was, I think Coyle had the assist on that, actually. But, you know, was it Krejci or was it his wingers? And that's been the whole question, right? But so Krejci's, he is a good, good player. And I think because of the money he makes, people kind of give him a lot of grief sometimes. But he's not playing with Pastrnak and Marchand. You know, he's playing with the second line wingers, and that's been the huge question mark, who plays with him. So I don't know if they've maximized his abilities here over the last several years. That's been a big problem for them. And they've tried to find solutions at wing, and they haven't been able to find it.
And they've tried to find those solutions now for years. I'm just looking at his numbers and just thinking here in the last couple of years. So Jake DeBrusk has a big season offensively last year. This year, he takes a big step back. David Krejci's numbers fall. I think a lot of that
plays
second
power play unit. I mean, they made the change here in the playoffs where he went to the first power play unit.
Right.
But he plays second power play minutes. And that first
which
power
generally
play
doesn't give you a lot of time. Yeah.
he's a guy that you can clearly see it. So Bergeron would be out here in the last couple of years. Bergeron would be out for a couple of games if he was injured, and then David Krejci would get elevated, and you could see the excitement in his game. You could see how his game just started to flourish again. You could see that again. It was clear when he got elevated and stayed on that number one power play unit, just how explosive he was, just how good he was. So he has the game-tying goal in the third period to send the game into overtime in Game 5. He's the guy who basically sets the table for David Pastrnak to get on the board in game five with a terrific, he freezes Andrei Vasilevsky to give Pastrnak a one-timer. He's looking at a half of the net is open. He's a guy that the Bruins, I think that they have tried clearly to try and maximize his abilities. It hasn't always been successful, but I think this is where a guy like Jake DeBrusk, it's time that you have to take a step forward. Now, I understand that when it comes to the way guys develop, it is not linear. The first guy that came to my mind this morning when I started thinking about this was Ivan Provorov. Terrific young defenseman. Last season, he was a mess. Some people thought that was because of the contract. Is there an analogy here between a guy like Provorov, even though it's a different position, and a guy like Jake DeBrusk, that maybe once this gets settled, that you can see a rise in his game? Either way, he's a guy that wasn't able to play to his capabilities this year, and I think it cost David Krejci and the Bruins.
Well, so your question, your original question was, you know, is there a scenario where Krejci gets moved to try to upgrade in other areas, okay? So are you comfortable with Bergeron, Coyle, Corrali, Lindholm? Or are you comfortable with Bergeron, Coyle, Studnica, Corrali? You know, are you comfortable right with that? If you're comfortable with that, well, then, yeah.
Well, look, I mean, it's you also... Charlie Coyle gets a $2 million bump starting next year on a long-term contract. They're committed to him for the long term. They are not committed to David Krejci for the long term.
No,
right
they
now.
See they know what's going to happen here in a couple years. I mean, can you afford to pay Krejci $7 million after next year?
I wouldn't think so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know that's so. Does he take a huge pay cut, or are you going to move him now while he still has a year left on his contract? I mean, look. I'm not advocating to trade him because I
think if you're
but you have to look at a lot of things right now.
But you're potentially losing a really good offensive defenseman that you don't really have a replacement for. You're going to lose your captain either this year or the year after that. If you don't feel like the guys in the pipeline are going to be good enough, you're
going
to have to give up
point.
Something of significant value to replace those guys.
These guys. You know, when you look at the drafts and they've hit on some of them. I mean, you know, Pastrnak they've hit on. They've hit on a couple of other guys, Grizzlick and some other players that are in their lineup right now. Carlo, you know, I know he didn't play up to his expectations in this playoff, but he's been good. I mean, he's developed into a really good defenseman. McAvoy's hit. You know, so you've hit on some of these, but you've missed on some too. And I know you're not going to hit on every one of them, but there's a couple guys, first round picks, that I'm saying, you know, it's time. Are these guys going to be able to make the jump and you know, be part of this lineup, you know, in the future? And that's the one that's hurting right now a little bit.
Michael is in North Andover. You're next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. Sad day that this is the last show. I really, really love your show. Great job.
Thank you.
A few things for you. What was their thinking in signing Vladdy for 3 years? And is there a Kevin Miller update? Is he a Bruin for next year or not? And Jacob Zabril, is it?
Zabril.
Six years. He's a first-round pick, 6 foot, 200 pounds. What's the status on him? And also, should Richie be a Bruin next year? Thanks, guys.
All right, appreciate the call. Well, Richie is under contract for next year.
Yeah, he's got to make a commitment to be ready to play next year. And I don't know for him. You know, I've heard people say that, you know, you're in shape, but you're not in like Bruin shape, or you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I've heard somebody say.
Well,
that,
they
you know,
they didn't both like, both he and Kostyuk both commented when they got here, like how fast the practices were,
So they need to be, you know, kind of evaluate where they are and be ready to go, you know, come this year. And Kostyuk was singled out by Cassidy, was he not?
So the conditioning wasn't where it needed to be.
Yeah, so you know, those guys need to make sure that their commitment level is where it needs to be when they show up for camp, whenever that is. Kevin Miller, unrestricted free agent. All depends on his health. Sure, they could sure use him.
There's a role on this team for him if he can play.
Who knows where he is in terms of ability level, you know, with the surgeries that he's had now.
Well, with the fact that he hasn't played in, you know, a year and a half now.
It would cost
I can't
him the
imagine
minimum to bring him back.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's going to be a lot of takers on the open market. So
love to have him. They love him. and you know, he's just, you know, he hard-nosed player. Zboril fits in with that group that I was talking about. Zboril, Seneshin, Vakanainen. You know, so Zboril was 2015. Let me get my readers on. right? Zboril was 2015. Vakanainen was 2017. You know, and in between you have McAvoy hit, but, you know, Frederick is 2000. Frederick's the same year as McAvoy. And then Lindgren was the guy after that. They traded Lindgren to the Rangers as part of the Bolesky deal, kind of moving that contract out, just like they kind of did last year. They say they traded a first-round pick in this coming draft to move the Backes deal. So, you know, they don't have a first-rounder this year. But, you know, Studnicka was 2017, and he looks like a, you know, really good player. The guy that went in front of him was Vakanainen, who played well in Providence, and so did Zboril. Recently, so it's taken him a few years, and I understand defensemen might take a little bit longer. McAvoy was the outlier there, but you know, it might take a little bit longer. But I need to see some progress from these guys and where they're at. Now, they were both on the roster, but they didn't see any time.
Ryan, so, I wanted to get back to one thing since you were talking about David Krejci and the money that he currently makes. Remember, if you free up the money, it's not as though the market is what it was 10 years ago in the National Hockey League as far as unrestricted free agents. You can't go out on the market and try and pay for some of your needs. Most of those guys, most of the good players that you want are restricted free agents or they're under contract. You're probably going to have to parlay some of your assets in order to get the assets that you need. You can't. The days have changed. You know, just if you want to look, okay, let's say you want to deal David Krejci, you're going to save some money. Who are you going to go out and get? Who's the guy that,
well, it's not
that
even
you're
necessarily
spend your money on?
Yeah, it's not even necessarily about spending that money in the free agent market as much as it is, look, he's going to bring a return potentially. So if flipping him gets you the defenseman that you need, you know, then it's worth thinking about. I understand what you're saying. I don't expect that they're going to go on a spending spree with $7.25 million. I'm more about maybe you get two pieces that fill two holes instead of the guy in the middle of two holes on the second line.
And that is certainly possible. There are no untradeable players. There are no untradeable players. I think in the National Hockey League, all we have to do is take the Wayne Gretzky as the example. You can name whichever sport that you want. But this is where the creativity has to come in, based on the dollars, either going in or out, or the type of assets that you have that you parlay in order to pick up the needs that you have.
Let's grab Chris in Chicago up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, guys. Sad day, obviously, with the boys going out. But a couple of quick points. Bob, I'm going to come at you a little bit here. Tampa beat you without one of the best players in the world, and they beat you handily. So, I mean, you had mentioned those players that Tampa picked up at the deadline. Those were available to you, too. That wasn't specifically for Tampa, so Don Sweeney made the point not to get these guys.
Hold on. That's where I have to cut you off, because I think Blake Coleman was on their radar. You can continue.
Okay. Out here in Chicago, obviously, with three Stanley Cups and some great success, they've had a couple years of down, but they're back on the way up. Just kind of going back to my last point, you do need to take some chances. And, you know, with the Bruins, it's at the deadline. Going out and spending a first-round pick and, I guess, dumping a contract with Backes to get Andre Kasha, just the guy was just terrible. I mean, I don't think that he, going forward, is a player that you can count on. He might be talented, but are you going to count on Andre Kasha to be there when you need him, kind of going forward? And lastly, guys, I know we're on a timetable here, but I just don't see it going forward. I think it's time to not blow it up, but to kind of blow out some of these pieces to kind of sustain some success going forward. I just don't think that you can beat the Phillies, the Islanders, and, of course, Tampa Bay going forward. I just don't think you have the horses. So I think you have to look at this realistically and say, do we blow this up and see if we can sustain something going forward? But I appreciate you guys. I love the show, and hope to talk to you next year.
I appreciate it, Chris. I mean, like,
yeah, it's an option.
Yeah.
I hate to see it, you know. But the worst thing you can do is just keep
You don't want to. You don't want to.
It's really raw right now, yeah. Right? I know it's only a few days, so that's the raw part of it. You have to kind of step back and take a really good look at it. By the way, Tampa and those trades, we already mentioned it. They gave up essentially 3 first round picks for those trades. So if you were willing to do that to bring in a couple of role players, they're better than role players. I got to give them more credit than
and
that.
And we were 20 goals.
And we were talking off air about, you know, they're going to pay a stiff penalty this offseason. They're going to have to get rid of some guys to get under the cap.
They have Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonough signed past this year. And Braden Coburn, who he played a couple of games in the playoffs, but they all their younger defensemen, they need to resign.
They have $5 million in cap space. They only have 3
their
defensemen under contract for next
million.
Year. Yeah,
they're going to have Sorelli's up for contract. He's going to make a bundle.
Sergachev.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about before. Sorry, Sergachev, Chernak. They're all up for contract, and they don't have anybody else signed.
And you have a slew of no trade clauses up front. That Steve Yzerman had given a lot of guys.
Hey, I commend them for it. They took a risk, and so far, so good. It's working out for them, you know. But they are going to take a hit in the future. So, okay, it depends on your philosophy, right? If you think, Bruins should have given up, you know, the first round picks for Coleman and Goodrow, you know, maybe they could have signed Bogosian. Bogosian was up for anybody to sign. They signed him for, you know, minimal money. Okay, that's fair, right, if you want to go after that. But it would have cost you a lot, especially for those forwards, to bring them in.
All right, we will continue. We got a whole other hour to go. Billy Jaffe's going to join us coming up next as well as the Sports Hub Hockey Show season finale continues.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Shoots and rest, flashed off the glove.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Hour number 2 of the Sports Hub Hockey Show, our season finale this week. Recapping the Bruins ousting in the second round of the bubble and what lays forward in the offseason as well. And now we turn our attention to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, and we welcome in our buddy Billy Jaffe, Nesson, NHL Network, and all points in between. What's up, Billy?
Good morning, gentlemen. Just enjoying the last 20 or 25 minutes of listening to you guys. Gorgeous day outside. And sad that this is our last show. Thrilled that we are able to come back for a month or so, month and a half, but bummed that this is our last one.
If you're Don Sweeney, how are you approaching this offseason?
Well, I think you have to approach this offseason looking ahead, not just next year, but the year after and the year after that. I think you have an opportunity to, well, I don't know if you're going to have an opportunity due to the pandemic situation. We don't know when the league's going to get going again. And that's going to, you know, I think in a normal year without, you know, some virus shutting down the world, I don't know. I think Don Sweeney would be aggressive in this offseason, knowing that he could move some salary, a few players, and restock without or reload, maybe not to win a cup next year, but to present themselves much more capable in 2 and 3 years. You give some of those young defensemen time to get going. You add some size to the back. You figure out or you try to figure out a little bit your goaltending situation. And you kind of, again, it's not a rebuild, but it's a reload by moving some significant assets, opening up some money. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that, though, this year, guys, given the whole pandemic thing, the flat cap, and the uncertainty for many teams out there just saying, geez, we don't know when we're going to open for business again, and we don't know if we want to carry some extra salary, et cetera. And so it's the conundrum that the Bruins are in right now is that they're still a really good team. They're not – I mean, look, they're a great team in the regular season. We all know you don't win cups in the regular season, though. They need to be built, I think, a little differently. I think you guys all agree for the playoffs. And I just don't know if they can get there due to the uncertainty of this offseason.
It's also a difficult position to be in because of some of the players that you've got here that, you know, you've been loyal to and have been loyal to you. And, you know, do you tell Patrice Bergeron that we're going to take a step back next year to try and take a step forward 2 or 3 years from now? I mean, that's a difficult conversation to have.
Well, I think it is difficult to have, but I also think that using him as an example, he's an incredibly bright person and a hockey player in particular. And you try and change things. You're not selling the season like, all right, we're going to be bad. But you have to do things to still make your team good, but they might not make them as good this year as they will be 2 years from now. And I just think that's the fact of the sports world. You know, I mean, are you going to go out? I mean, what do you don't have the cap room to go out and buy a bunch of players to build on what you have with this group and not have to subtract from it. But, you know, there's a great chance. And wouldn't you guys agree? The Krug is gone. I mean, that's a huge loss on your back end for, you know, especially being such a power play team. You know, as much as you want Grizzlick or McAvoy to replace that, it's going to be a different look. I'm not saying they won't be good, but it's going to be a different look and feel back there. You don't have that ability to just go out and spend a la the Detroit Red Wings in the 90s and or before the cap in the 2000s, you know, early on, and to build to it. So you have to make some bold moves. And by the way, making strong moves doesn't mean come trade deadline time. Now you can't. You can always add to that in other ways to help build the team you currently have.
Ryan, I want to jump in here real quick because most general managers around the National Hockey League will say that our solutions have to come from within. Mm-hmm. So to go back to a point that Bob raised about a lot of the guys that have currently populated the Providence Bruins, and we've seen a little bit of this season, if the Bruins want to take the step forward that I think everybody hopes for next year, it has to come from within. I was just looking at Tampa Bay. If you look at their entire forward group, if you include Steven Stamkos, do you know how many first-round picks they have at forward? One, and that's Stamkos. That's it. All of that growth has come from within, or they've traded to pick up a few guys. But none of those guys was highly touted coming into the draft. Now, if you look at the Bruins' top line, other than David Pastrnak, he's the only first-round pick on that top line. So I think what I'm getting at is Trent Frederick, Jake DeBrusk, Andre Kasha, some of the guys that Bruce Cassidy had mentioned during the playoffs, that middle group, they need to take the step forward to help out the core that has done so much for so long for this team.
I would agree. And you need to add to that core. And I think that's where if you're able to make some moves, whether you get more high draft picks or you get more depth, you know, good middle tier players that are still really good, you know, they add to your depth. I think it's pretty obvious the Bruins need it. I mean, I think they need to get bigger on the back end. I know they've talked, Bruce Cassidy talked about getting more offensive from the back end. I think, Beersy, you were the one that brought up, you know, Zach Bogosian, hindsight being 2020. Would he not have looked good on the third pair for the Bruins? I mean, like, hindsight being 2020.
But, Billy, you didn't lose because of your third pair defense. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, no. I know. But couldn't you?
He would have been a nice complimentary piece back there. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, and look, I'm not being critical. What I'm saying is that would be the type of player-ish. Look, we had it with Kevin Miller. That type of player. Yep. That would have been great. But the Bruins need, I think, while of course I'd love to see the D-men get involved offensively, that's part of the hockey nowadays, and I love it. I'm a big fan of it. I think they need to become harder to play against in their own zone again. The structure's great, great system, but bigger physically. Yeah, it's time. I think they need to do, I mean, look at, forget just Tampa. Look at Vegas defensively. Look at how, you know, Colorado, I know they lost, but before Eric Johnson was out there, D was bigger, and, you know, they needed him back there. So, anyways, they need that. And, Judd, I agree with you. They need the young depth guys. The core, we'll call them the second core. They have to become a second core, because if they're not, the top guys are going to get worn down.
Well, and part of that, you know, you're talking about needing these guys to step up, and some of them have had opportunities to do that, and it's not happening. So at what point do you get impatient? You know, look, they've got Jake DeBrusk is a restricted free agent this year. Needs a bump in pay. We'll see how much of a bump that's going to be from $863,000. But you would expect that it's going to be significant.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
At the same time, you know, what's he going to be? You know, we've got a pretty good sample size now of Jake DeBrusk, and the consistency just hasn't been
there. But the consistency hasn't been there, but he is I think we can agree that he's a 20-goal scorer, right? He had 19 before the stop this year, he had 27 last year, right? So he's a 20-goal scorer. So sometimes you're going to have some frustrations with a guy that's streaky as a goal scorer. And there's players throughout their careers that have been like that. They can score 20 to 25 goals, but they're going to go quiet for, they're going to go dark for a few games. And they always talk about, the Bruins do, about, okay, if you're not scoring, what else are you doing to help the team? You know, you're not going to score every night. We get that. But what else are you doing to help the team? And is there enough there to say, well, he does deserve a bump in pay? Obviously, he's going to get bumped. But I get scared when I look at some of the other contracts that have been given out by teams prior to the pandemic. And his comparables, the numbers are high.
Yeah.
The numbers are high for some of these other guys that have signed, that are the same type of player or similar. Yeah.
No, there's no question. And he's only 23. And Art Ryan, I get your – look, I know there's other fans that get frustrated too if we're using Jake as an example. I'm not ready to say, me personally, with the right kind of deal, to Bob's point, what is that going to be? It can't be extreme. But I look at it as a bridge deal, short term, because – especially off this contract, there's got to be a bit of a maturation process for Jake and his game and the way he presents it, et cetera, to where he becomes a more well-rounded, more fully reliable player.
He might get something like Carlo and McAvoy got, right?
I'm fine with it. Right, exactly. 2-3 years.
Three years, but where the third year is escalated.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And remember, he didn't sign his deal till later because of his age and coming in, et cetera. So maybe by the time he's, let's say, 26, if you know, in a perfect hockey world and a perfect Bruin fan world, he's matured more. And his inconsistent play is much less inconsistent. So I guess that would mean he's more consistent.
We're talking about the Bruins needing some wingers to support.
Yep.
Jake DeBrusk is a 20-plus goal scorer, so take him for what he is. He's going to give you 20 to 25 goals, maybe more, but I think he's proven that. So
yeah,
and we're talking about the Bruins needing to upgrade on wing.
I get it.
That's not a guy you give away.
Well, but at the same time, look, I mean, he had 4 goals and no assists after the break, after they came back in 13 games. That line disappeared for a good chunk of the Tampa Bay series. You know, that's RJ, if he's going to play a top six role on this team, it needs to be there more consistently than it is. And if I'm going to commit to him, it needs to be there more consistently than it is.
I agree with you. He needs to be more consistent. But that's a streaky player right there. And if that's what he is, then that's what he is. Maybe he gets more consistent as years go on. But I'm telling you, you see players who go their whole career like that. They frustrate you on some nights, but they'll get at the end of the, you know, when at the end of the season, you're looking down, he has 20 to 25 goals.
And that's what a lot of second line players are. You know, let's face it. When you look at guys like Marchand, Pastrnak, Bergeron, they bring it just about every night. That's why they're top line players. That's why they're superstars. That's the difference that the guys who play in fits and starts that are very streaky, they're not your first line players. They're second or below.
Billy Jaffe is with us from Ness. And Billy, can you hang in with us for another segment?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, we will continue with him coming up next, and we'll get back to your calls coming up as well. 617-779-0985. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Two-center fire, score!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers here in our Town Fair Tire studios. And joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline as well is Billy Jaffe. You know him, you love him, from Nesson's Bruins coverage. And
I got to ask Billy a question.
Sure.
Did you have, you have to pronounce the name for me, from the Dallas Stars, scoring a hat trick and went beating Colorado yesterday? Kiv Ranta?
I can't even. I mean, I all of a sudden I'm like,
who?
And I heard his name the other day, playing, and I had to do the double take, and I'm like, who is Kirvalanta? And of course you hear Joel, not Joel. It's actually Joel. I'm like, who? And then I look it up and I see another Finn. I mean, all they do is, like, you know, between, you know, Heiskanen and him, and oh my God, what a, you see that
he
last
spent the year in the American Hockey League. Came up with a hat trick in the clinching game yesterday.
What? Okay, let me ask you guys this, and it's rhetorical, so I understand the NHL is just trying to get the games in. I get it. I'm not really being critical, but yet I guess I am here. You're putting a game 7 on at 4 o'clock Eastern in the afternoon on the Friday afternoon of you know, a long weekend, and I understand that we're in different times and it's a bubble and all that.
But forget about
that
it.
Game was fun.
I mean,
phenomenal.
Billy, 2 o'clock Mountain time, right? You got Central and Mountain team. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well,
they're playing for game 7.
Western games in, right?
Well, they could have played one today.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I just.
Hey, if the Bruins would have gone to game 7, okay, obviously they're not. But game 6 and 7 were back to back. That means you're playing game 7 on the back side of the back.
The scheduling for the round made no sense.
I know that they want to get the games in. They want to get the season over as quickly as possible so they can start looking towards moving forward. And nobody wants to sit around in the bubble and all that, but that's I don't like the 6 and 7 games being back to back.
No, I don't either. But I mean, this game, if anybody who's listening had a chance to see Colorado and Dallas, like, thank God. You want to, meaning like offense galore, some bad goaltending. I mean, Colorado's playing their third goalie. You know, Dallas is playing their second goalie. Ben Bishop was viewed cheering in the booth.
Every game's 5-4, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. And there's rebounds galore. And there's, you know, there's missed glove saves. And it's, you know what? Beersy, it's awesome. I mean, it was, I love it. So, yeah, y'all Kiviranta. 24-year-old
new hero of Dallas.
Never heard of him. Never heard of him until 2 days ago, 2 games ago.
Just let's talk a little bit about the Flyers and the Islanders series, which has kind of swayed back and forth. It looked, you know, at one point like the Flyers were, you know, for real, and now they've kind of hit some speed bumps along the way, but now a chance to win game 7 and match up against Tampa Bay. What have you thought of that, about that series overall, and who do you think comes out of it tonight?
Well, what have I thought about it? I think it's actually been a fun series, too, although for a while Philly fans would say no. I have absolutely had my analyst eyes opened by Kevin Hayes and how well that he has. You know, look, he was always a nice player, you know, nice and you know, very skilled for a big man, gets so many breakaways for a big guy. You wouldn't call him and look at him and say he's a speed demon, but yet he gets breakaways all the time. So that's anticipation. But Kevin Hayes, if it wasn't for him, they lose this series in the sense that he just pulled them along for a while. Finally, guys, you know, Voracek started picking up. Claude Giroux hasn't done much offensively. Other guys have come to the forefront. They've had some big goals by Dean in there that have saved them. Carter Hart's been inconsistent, but this team, once they got to some structure, boy, when they turn the puck over, they're just bad. But when they don't, they're damn good. When they get to some structure and they don't flip right into the Islanders' 1-1-3 hand, transitional hockey hand, they're okay. I mean, both goaltenders have been – Varlamov was good for a while. He suffered a bit, struggled a bit. Hart's been up and down. You're going to see the two of them tonight unless something crazy happens. I think the better team in this series overall has been the Islanders. I do. So I will pick them to win. I think the better team wins in the end. But, you know, the Islanders had a chance to stomp on, you know, kick the legs out from underneath of the Philadelphia Flyers, and they didn't. And so now they're back in it. So I'll go with the Islanders just from the fact I think that they're the better structured team overall, but not by much.
Hayes, you know, I'd have to go back and look. I know that they paid a lot for him. He was an unrestricted free agent, Kevin Hayes. I thought maybe they had overpaid for him, but he's performed. He's been great. He's been really good.
Yeah.
And the Flyers, you know, they've benefited. You know, we talked about earlier, Billy, you know, how the Bruins need to, you know, improve, right? The Flyers on the back end, they've got some high draft picks back there. Provorov leads them, obviously, but they've made a couple of good trades, including the one for Niskanen. But their D are young, their goaltender's young, and you know, they've got some young players who have led them, but Kevin Hayes has been their best player up front.
Yeah, he's been great. And remember, they did it with the other day without Couturier, who is probably their best overall centerman, right? I wouldn't say probably, he is. And so I've been thoroughly impressed with Kevin Hayes. The local Boston kid has really blossomed in the last year or two, but in particular, this feels like a real, hey, look at me, hockey world type of party that he's hosting.
Well, Vigneault had him in New York, so I think that helped a lot too, because he performed great in New York before he was traded to Winnipeg at the deadline, and Winnipeg gave up a lot for him, and Winnipeg ends up losing, and then he signed this contract here with Philly and gets reunited with Vigneault, which I think really helped.
Hey, one thing about Provorov quickly, and I think he does lead them, but he's not a great power play guy in my eyes. Like, otherwise, he's a great player. So, you know, I think Bruins fans always want, I'm just making the parallel to a guy like Charlie McAvoy. We want him to be everything. Well, of course, you want everybody to be everything. But I don't know if Charlie, I mean, Beersy, Judge, you guys tell me, you know, is Charlie ever going to be a 40-something plus point guy? I don't know. Can he be a regular 30-plus and play 25 a night? Yeah, this is Provorov. At least that's what I see in Provorov. I don't see him being a number one power play quarterback in my life, but he's still a defense.
Victor Hedman wasn't playing number one power play for Tampa.
That's still baffling to me. He's still getting the job done. But I think a guy like Charlie McAvoy, listen, if Krug departs, McAvoy should be on that number one power play unit in theory. I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't consistently reach 40 points. He's done back-to-back 30.
He can be 40.
I think it easily should be a 40-point.
Is that his base? Is that his base or is that his high?
No, I think that's his base. I think that's where he's at. Then the question is, okay, well, where can you move up from there? Where can you... You know, the Bruins during the regular season talked about, well, we want him to get him to shoot more. We want him to get him more engaged offensively. I'm sure along with everything that Bruce Cassidy wants to do with that decor heading into next season, that's going to be a big focus. So I do think a guy like Charlie, I think you can count on 40. The question is how much more can you count on beyond that?
Yeah.
Billy, which matchup would be tougher for the Lightning? Is it Philly or is it the Islanders that give them a tougher go?
Islanders. And I don't think it's that tough for them. I don't. I think Tampa, I don't think they march in four games over them, but I do think that it's a 5 or 6 game series. If they, you know, and I think the Islanders, because of their structure, the Islanders do have more skill than people realize. Barzal, we all know, but Beauvillier, Brock Nelson, Josh Bailey's playing at a offensively better level. I mean, they're getting some other guys too. They got some, but you want to talk and I go back to this again. You want to talk about some big guys in the back end. Nobody knows a Pelican, Pulock. I always can mix them up, but
Mayfield.
But Mayfield, exactly. You know, they've got some big guys back there, Judd. You know, RJ. They've got like 6'2" to 6'4" guys back there, but you don't really know them. You don't really know them at all. And I think that they're tough. And they're 1-1-3. Their structure they play is real good. But I also think the Tampa structure is very good, and I think the depth of Tampa will be better than the depth of the Islanders. The thing about the Islanders, they have a feeling right now, although, again, the last two games, they've struggled. They regained that kind of, you know, they've been good. They've outshot, but I think that I don't think they've been – the last two games, I think mentally the Islanders have gotten a little tired, just my take on it. But I do think if they win, that the Tampa Bay Lightning would have a little harder time with them. I think Philadelphia – is a higher-risk team, especially some of their back-end guys, sometimes burping up the puck too much. I do.
The Islanders play with the lead, though. They should win that game.
And the Islanders would, right.
Well, and I think Lou Lamoriello made two really savvy pickups there at the deadline. Now, he paid a price for J.G. Pageau, but he has certainly come in and produced. And to get a guy like Andy Green, who wasn't originally playing in your lineup when the playoffs started, to come in and make an impact.
Yeah, Boychuk got hurt, right?
That's a pretty good addition.
I agree. Andy Green's a smart player, and he totally gets what, you know, Lou and what Barry Trotz wants. So I agree about that. And the Pageau thing, you know, they had to pay more because they were signing him, and they signed him to the 5-year deal. So they gave up a lot, but they got him for 5-plus years now.
Last thing for you, Billy, who you like in the Vegas-Dallas series?
Vegas, baby. You know, I know we talked about Rick Ball.
Dallas isn't going to score five goals a game against.
No.
Come on, you don't like the Finnish mafia there? Like Miro Heiskanen, Rope
Vegas gave up
14
shots yesterday against Vancouver, if I read that right. I
mean, you did. There was two shots on goal for the first period, and then at one point late in the second, I didn't know, I think through two. It was six shots on goal. I may have my numbers wrong, so forgive me. I'm sorry, but it was ridiculously low.
And check out the power play.
A couple of high-end chances, but that, you know, and it was nothing in the third period.
Check out the power play, the amount of time that Vancouver had on the man advantage and still couldn't get pucks through.
Well, right. And let's also, let's tip quick hockey helmet tip to Thatcher Demko, kid out of Boston College. What a performance. That's going to make the not them signing of Jacob Markstrom that much easier, I think. I know they love Jacob Markstrom, but they've been grooming Demko, who's, you know, 20 through 24. Like, he's the perfect example. Give your goalies 2 years in the American League. You know, let him marinate down there. Let him mature there. And then move him up. And Demko's a big kid, strong kid. Anyway, Vegas wins that series. I'm thrilled for Rick Bowness. The euphoria, we touched on him last week, and Beersy talked about him, too. I'm thrilled to see the euphoria on his face because, they panned to him about three or four times in that third period. And I was getting heartburn looking at him. It looked like he was about to lose his pregame.
He's as fiery as they come behind the bench.
I know.
My first pro coach.
Did you see his face? Like I was getting Rick Bones. Come on. And anyway, so they won. I love the guys. So happy for them. Colorado, you want to talk about depleted by injuries? I think Jared Bednar did a great job, too, there with no Landeskog yesterday, in addition to all their other guys. Holy smokes. But anyway, yeah, Vegas-Tampa final. That's what we got. And I think Vegas wins that.
I mean, all the injuries. If you're counting on Michael Hutchinson to be your starting goaltender in Game 7 of a playoff game, you're depleted at that point.
I still am a big NXS fan, though. I am. NXS. Like, big fan, but no, he's a goalie. Look, kid was missing some pucks, some opportunities. Wonderful kid, everything. I don't really know him at all, but you know, I've only heard great things about him, and he's a great depth goaltender.
Billy, I appreciate it as always, and enjoy the hopefully short off season. We'll talk to you soon.
Guys, be good. Talk to you later. I get paid by the word. See ya.
All right, thanks, Bill. He's a great kid. I don't really know him, but he's a great kid. All right, we're into our final half hour of this week's and this season's Sports Hub Hockey Show. We will get to your calls in the final segment coming up. Jump aboard right now, 617-779-0985 with your thoughts on what the Bruins need to accomplish this offseason. That's next.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub. Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Back here on The Sports Hub Hockey Show as we wind down our season finale. Don't really know when the NHL will be back. Expectation, I think, for a lot of people is that this will be a kind of a quick off season. A lot gets accomplished in a short amount of time, and hopefully it's back sooner than later. But obviously the world conditions, we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know if there's bubbles involved. We don't know how much travel's involved or if there's fans involved, and a lot of that's out of their control. Have you guys gotten any sense at all as to what to expect as far as next season goes?
No. I mean, I know, you know, draft will be coming up here as soon as the season ends, free agency period. It's always in a normal year, it's everything happens like right after the season ends, right after that game seven. You know, you get the awards, you get the draft, you get the free agency. There's trades that are made, and then, you know, for the latter half of July and August, everything dies down.
Yeah,
you know, for the most part. And so this year's it's going to be frantic as soon as the season ends, because there's going to be a condensed off season, and they haven't they're they said that they're flexible, Judd. Help me out with that. Like, on when, you know, training camp will start and what it's going to look like, they might have to get creative again. And they were talking about playing regionally, just instead of traveling all over the place.
Well, that's kind of what, like, baseball has done. They've limited it to a certain number of teams, so you won't play everybody. You're not going to be traveling out west, things like that.
Depending on the climate at that time, who knows?
I think you have so many different variables that are out there. And I think
you need fans if they're going to make any money.
And the dates that have been thrown out are just tentative. I think they're targets. So I think they're targeting November 17th for training camp. They're targeting December 1st to begin the season. The other thing they keep saying is that they want to play a full 82-game slate. So if you start December 1st.
There's people that are pretty skeptical on that, if they can or not.
How are you going to be able to pull that off? And you're going to have to work again in conjunction with the players. If you're going to compress the schedule, I guarantee there are certain things.
There's only so many games that you can play on a short amount of time.
Exactly. And to Bob's point, I think when it comes to, okay, are you going to play regionalized games? Are there going to be fans in the building? If you're going to allow fans in the building, how many can you get in the building? What are the economics of it? The economics in Major League Baseball and the economics in hockey are apples to oranges. They're completely different. You know, and the other thing that when the pause hit for the National Hockey League, which was very different than baseball, guys had received everything but, I think, three checks. Now you're going to start from scratch. When guys are supposed to get paid, and you were expecting at that point that you would generate revenue because your building is open and your sponsorships have begun selling. That's not going to be the case here. So I don't know how that math is going to work. I saw Cam Neely, and you mentioned very briefly that it's going to be a very complex situation to try and be able to play without fans in the building, at least from the get-go.
Well, just to give you an idea, I saw this morning the Indianapolis Colts announced that they're going to have 2,000 fans in a 61,000-seat stadium for their home opener in a couple of weeks.
Well, I think the Dolphins are going to have, I want to say,
20%. 25% or something like that.
25%.
Yeah. But even that, I mean, so it's like just kind of take that and say, okay, you know, is it a possibility that the Garden has a few thousand people in it when they return to play? I mean, that's not going to be tremendously profitable either way. So, there's a lot that's going to have to be overcome. You know, the bubble has worked magnificently. It worked. They've been able to play two rounds. They haven't had any positive tests. It looks like they're going to get through this unscathed, but if you get back to some semblance of normalcy as far as travel goes, that opens up for a whole different set of problems that you haven't had to deal with yet. So we'll all be kind of waiting with bated breath over this short off season, or hopefully short off season, to see what that's going to look like when they do get back.
Joe, have you heard, are the teams that are in Toronto, they're going to Edmonton. Is that correct?
I don't know what was decided. That's my
understanding. That was the plan.
That was the plan.
Both conference finals will be in Edmonton.
Game today to finish up before, you know, the Flyers and Islanders, but, I wasn't clear on if the families are coming or not. I thought that they were for the conference finals, but now I was hearing some other things that they might not be, just continue in the bubble. So I haven't read up on it enough recently. Kind of lost interest after the games lost. So,
oh,
I mean, I've watched
you.
The games, but I haven't paid much attention to what's going on around the league.
So. I haven't seen anything like that necessarily, and it sounded like the parameters that they laid out for family to be able to join, they were, you know, understandably pretty restrictive. So I don't know how that's going to take place. I don't know whether it's going to take place. But going back to the start of the season, the commissioner, Gary Bettman, I remember him joking that maybe we'll just start with the Winter Classic on January 1st and then play from there. I don't know. I don't know what's possible, but somehow that's still resonating in my head.
And like you said, the financial aspect of it, not just for the owners, but for the players comes into play at that point. Because now you're talking about the potential. If you can't get 82 in, everybody's salary is going to get smaller as part of that.
Well, it's 50%. So it's a 50-50 split, you know, and that's where that whole escrow thing came in without, you know, getting people cross-eyed here on a Saturday morning talking about numbers. That's why they wanted to try and spread out some of the escrow payments, because they could be massive.
Let's go to Mike. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show, great season. I really appreciate the product that you guys provide for Bruins fans.
Thank you.
You know, I will say, I think the Bees have a little bit of an identity crisis right now. And I think, like all identity crises in hockey, that needs to get addressed from the back end first. It was probably 10 years ago since we last had a solid identity as a blue line. And it was big and mean and hard to play against in your own end. And if we're moving away from that, I think that's fine. If we're going to play fast, get out of the zone quickly, be possession, be offensive, that's great. But then I think we need to take a really hard look at guys like Z, and we need to figure out how he actually fits in the lineup. I don't think he can play top pair of minutes if we're trying to be an offensive team. I think he's a weight on McAvoy's ankle offensively, and I think if we are shifting, we need to kind of move on.
What's the ideal scenario for Bruins? What does the back end look like? What does your top six look like? Is it does it need to be
Victor
bigger?
Hedman,
does it need to be more offensive? Does it need to be?
And look, I think McAvoy is developing. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier with Billy and about, you know, how many points is McAvoy going to get? What's his ceiling, right? Mm-hmm. So I went back. You know, who did they compare McAvoy to coming into the league? It was Drew Doughty, right? That was you got to be careful with comparisons.
Sure.
But that was somebody that you looked at as comparable. Drew Doughty's numbers, he's had a couple seasons where he's put up 60 points, but his numbers are between 30 and 50, and he plays a ton of minutes. So, and he plays physical, and he plays against the other team's top guys. That's McAvoy right now. That's where that's what he is becoming. Okay. And if he puts up a few more points, then great. I'd love to see him develop into that guy can put up a few more points. But he's your number one defenseman. So you're building around that. Carlo's solid back there. Carlo's a guy that can defend. He's big. He's fast. He's got good feet, good stick. You know, he's not going to be offensive.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you start to kind of work around that. But ideally, I see, a combination of that. I mean, in an ideal world, right, you want to have that combination of size and the ability to skate and the ability to move the puck. I think that's very important to them. But is McAvoy Hedman? No, he's not. You know, can he develop into that? I'm not sure. Hedman was a three overall, third pick? You know, I mean, this guy's 6'6", can move, and can play both ends of the ice all the time. And then he's got McDonough to back him up. So if you're comparing to Tampa. So I want to see some combination of that, and that's where I want to see if some of these younger guys are developing into that. John Moore was signed. He hasn't been able to do the job. He hasn't been able to stay in the lineup. You got Clifton and Lauzon who are – low pay, but lower side pairing, mm-hmm. of the D. You know, are they somebody that you can count on night in and night out to be in your lineup and to be able to deliver? That's what they have to figure out right now. And you know, where's if you lose Krug, and I agree on the Chara thing. You know, he's still a very good defender, especially on the penalty kill, and he's going to play against the other team's top lines. But there's certain matchups he's going to have trouble with, and Tampa. And even Carolina to a certain extent showed that.
And to Bob's point, when it comes to a guy like Charlie McAvoy, how do you maximize him? How do you maximize him? I think it is obviously much more difficult for a guy like Char to maximize his top end potential.
They're set on the right side. Okay. You're set on the right side, at least your top two. Mm. And then, you've got.
If Kevin Miller can ever be somebody,
but we've been saying that for 2 years now because he's been hurt. But the left side is still very much up in the air. I like the way Grizzlick plays. I like the way he defends. I want to see him back, and he's a restricted free agent.
That was my next question. Is so if you're probably going to lose Krug and Chara is questionable, how big of a role can Matt Grizzlick play in that? Is he a top four guy? Is he a top two guy?
They like that top power play unit as constituted to have a left shot D-man up there. Now they put Krejci on there instead of, and he kind of moved things around. I don't know if that stays the way, but they like it to be a left shot D as opposed to a right shot D with that unit. So if that's the case, then Grzelcyk is going to be the guy that takes over, you know, if Krug goes. So, you know, there's a lot of value to the way Matt Grzelcyk plays. He's quick. He closes on guys. He's very good, but sometimes, you know, hey, you're battling with big guys behind the net. That's going to be a tough battle to win sometimes, and there was a couple goals that were scored, you know, while he was in some of those battles.
Peter in Lexington, you'll be the last caller of this season. Hey, what's up?
Hey, it puts a lot of pressure on me, guys. Great show. A couple quick questions you can comment on. I mean, I don't think this crew will make it again, but nobody's commented on Bergeron, who had 4 months to recover from his injury. He did not look good to me in the series, and it didn't look like he usually does. He may just be getting old and have a lot of playing time. That's one I want to comment on. And then maybe this is too negative, but both Pasternak and DeBrusk have great single skills. But I look at a guy like MacKinnon in these series, and then, you know, they're both easily moved off the puck, in my opinion, both DeBrusk and Pasternak. I'd like you to comment on both those, if you don't mind.
Appreciate it.
Well,
Peter.
MacKinnon's a tough comparison.
I was going to say, it's pretty lofty.
He's the best player in the NHL right now. Look, Pasternak's not a huge guy. He's a lot stronger now than he was. DeBrusk is not a huge guy. So, yeah, there's times that they're going to, especially when you go up against big defensemen, that they're going to be moved off pucks. I mean, that's the reality of it. It's great to have the combination of. It's great to have a MacKinnon, but we not many guys are like that. So they've improved their strength quite a bit, especially in Pasternak's case. You know, when he first came into the league, he was always getting kind of pushed off pucks. Now he wins battles, he gets his nose dirty, but you know, there's times he's going to lose some of those battles. And Bergeron, God, love him. He does have a lot of wear and tear in his body, and the way that he plays at both ends of the ice. You know, it's the amount of minutes and the important minutes, he certainly didn't look right throughout this playoff. And, you know, I know it was injury related, right? But he's had some of these injuries now over the last few years. There's going to be wear and tear that wears you down. So, I mean, that's something that nobody wants to really admit, but it is the reality.
I mean, he's got over 1,200 games, regular and postseason.
He's not a big guy either, by the way.
No.
But you talk about a guy that doesn't lose many battles for pucks and rarely gets knocked down for, you know, he's not a big guy, but he's strong on his skates and he knows how to win those.
Well, guys, we're getting ready to wrap up here. So thanks for sitting in here with us every Saturday, and great job on the calls throughout, and
see you in a couple months.
Hopefully it won't be too long before we're back together again. That's going to do it for another season of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We've got Arcand and Gasper coming up next here on the Sports Hub. I am back with you tomorrow. I'm going to be here tomorrow afternoon and Monday morning with Marshall Hooks. We'll look forward to that. We'll get into a little Bruin stuff, but I'm sure a lot of football talk as they get ready to get the Patriots season underway this week. Stick around for Arcand and Gasper next, and then, of course, Celtics game coming up tonight here on the Sports Hub.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.